All right, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 37 of the Porchcast. We are joined by a rowdy crew today for episode 37, broadcasting from the Pint Room out in Littleton, Colorado, celebrating Cider Week, Colorado. We are joined by a round table of who's who in Colorado craft cider. So we'll get to that bunch in just a moment. Once again, for the show, excited to welcome Hunter Grondin, our co-host, and also Sam Sly, our producer. Lots to get to today. We're going to talk a little bit about the mass exodus of breweries from Wicked Weed's Funkatorium Invitational. Also the subsequent Birds Fly South, the Funk Collective, which is a result of all those breweries leaving. Lots of other beer news that happened over the past 2-3 weeks, including the brewery selling a majority of its stakes to Castanea, as a private equity firm, Peter Buchart leaving New Belgium, and a lot more other Anheuser-Busch related topics, which we generally try not to touch too much on that, but we've just had a lot going on in the beer world lately. So before we get into the thick of things, I want to thank our sponsors, First Draft Taproom and Kitchen. It's a pour-your-own-draft system located at 1309 26th Street. They've got a pour-your-own-draft system where people can go up and try as much or as little as they want. Also, Latitude Financial Group, out there helping doing financial planning for your business or personal use, Latitude Financial Group. A big thank you to OnTap Credit Union, who helps provide banking solutions to businesses and small businesses and personal banking needs. We'll get into more from OnTap Credit Union shortly. And also Made by Chalk, which is a tremendous organization who helps with all your branding needs. Made by Chalk, a big thank you to them. All right, let's jump right into it. We are joined by a veritable who's who in Colorado craft ciders. We've got Eric Foster from Stem Ciders, also rejoined by Ryan Means from Stem Ciders as well. Got Brad Page from Colorado Cider Company, and Zandy Bustamante, also from Colorado Cider Company, and Eric Heilstead from C Squared Ciders. How's it going, guys?
It's great.
Good.
The Cider All-Star cast.
Cider All-Star cast.
We're slowing down a little bit after a long week.
It's only been, what, 5 or 6 days of Cider Week Colorado so
Cider
far.
Binging?
Yeah, a little bit.
Cidered out. All right.
It's been a big acid trip.
Awesome. We'll get to more on the acid trip later, Brad. But why don't we start out, tell us a little bit about what Cider Week Colorado is all about. Eric, why don't you lead us and give our listeners a little bit of a history lesson in this week of cider?
Yeah, sure. Colorado Cider Week is really just a celebration of craft cider in Colorado. So we've got we have 16 cider makers currently producing in the state of Colorado, which is up pretty drastically from just a few years ago, and there's plenty more opening up in the near future. And craft cider is a very up and coming product here in Colorado, and we just wanted to take the time and take the effort to celebrate that and really showcase some of the products that are available, not only locally made but also some really great craft products that are available from around the world. So this is technically this is the second annual Cider Week Colorado. We started it last year pretty small, really just in Denver, but this year we've expanded it quite a bit. We have most of those producing cideries involved in one way or another, with events around town, events at all of our tap rooms, and then culminates with an event called the Press Conference, which will be held in Denver on Saturday, which is really just a time when we can all get together. It's done in the style of your typical beer fest, but there's some really fun, family-friendly stuff going on. We're going to be pressing some cider so you can see what the juice looks like when it's coming out and really just experience the whole thing from the apple to the glass.
And that press conference is taking place this Saturday, correct?
Yeah, correct. It's at the Masonic Temple on Federal and
35th. Right by the case.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. 2 to 5, I think.
Yeah.
I think we'll have 18 or 19 ciders across the country, 60-plus ciders.
Wow.
Everything ranging from super dry and funky to some of the sweeter ciders out there available. And
Lauren's got some Spanish stuff, too.
Yeah, some Spanish ciders, so international now.
Prince really
cool. Fancy.
Now, Brad, how did Cider Week Colorado come about? Is this a...
Well, I mean, it's something that the Cider Week really started in New York, mostly in the Hudson Valley, and it was a concept, I mean, taking from Beer Week, craft beer weeks around the country. So I think the first one was in New York and then moved probably to Washington State. Michigan's got one. Everybody just sort of jumped in the bandwagon. Although the New Yorkers were sort of typical, they came up with a graphics package and they wouldn't share it with anybody. It's like, well, it's just a word. I mean, we don't really need your font to make Cider Week here, so we blazed our own font trail and we're doing Cider Week Colorado all on our own.
Yeah, they can get, those New Yorkers can get really possessive over Helvetica, you know, right? Yeah.
They've rewritten the Old Testament. The Garden of Eden and the apple came from the Hudson Valley.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Now, not many people know that.
Now, despite New York's kind of bullish stance on font usage, Eric, you guys are Sea Squirt Ciders, one of the newer guys on the scene here. How has the reception been? Is this a pretty tight-knit community?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in the greater Denver area, there's only three major cider producers, Stem, Colorado Cider Company, and us, Sea Squirt Ciders. Especially we're seeing that Cider Week this week, we're seeing a lot of our accounts that we all work with throughout the year come together and bring all of us together and do these fun events like we're doing tonight at the Pint Room. We've had a great reception so far, and it's been a fun week.
It'd be pretty awkward if you didn't say that you got along well with the other guys here sitting at the table.
No.
There's actually a cage fight going on.
So you want the real story? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, that's what porch drinking is all about, right? We get down and dirty with it all.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool to see a place like here at Pint Room. I mean, they have 10 ciders on draft. I think it's the most in the state besides our friends up at St. Vrain.
That's incredible.
They're a new cidery to the state as well, and they have 25 ciders plus, all from Colorado on draft. So everyone from Snowcap, Talbots, all the guys. There's a big Western Slope presence as well in the cider world here in Colorado.
That's super exciting.
Do you guys expect cider houses to start opening? I know there's a kombucha spot that's opened in Lower Highlands.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Eric and I talk about this quite a bit. I think, at least from our perspective, the better thing is to start seeing some craft bars that maybe feature cider. But, I mean, we all, in fact, today, it's like I still like to have a beer. So
sure.
I think a place that had 25 taps and maybe 15 or cider, you still can find a good beer but have cider. I don't know how many exclusive cider places from a strictly retail standpoint there will be. And we don't know.
Except producers are popping up left and right. I mean, just today announced was
Haken Family.
Haken Family Cider.
In Aurora.
Going to be out in Aurora by the Stanley Marketplace. So.
Aurora claims that they invented the apple as well.
And the apricot.
That's right.
So this movement, the cider movement, it seems like we're just very much like craft beer, we're seeing a lot more innovation happening within the cider sphere. Can you all tell us a little bit more about some of the innovative, developments that are happening in cider right now? And, it seems like cider is really starting to hit its mark in terms of people understanding it. It's not just your typical, soda pop. Yeah, exactly. I think that's a good description of it. A lot of this stuff is very nuanced. You're seeing a lot of dry kind of more approachable ciders than historically what we've seen on the market. And then last time we were over at STEM, we tried some really unique stuff as well. So where can cider go from here?
I think there's a lot of exploration going on in cider, and I think a lot of cider makers are really trying to figure out what their identity is and how to come into their own. But, that's going to just continue to happen for the foreseeable future. But I think the biggest thing that we need to work on and are currently working on in our industry is a way to communicate what our ciders are to the consumer.
Sure.
In beer, there's all kinds of classifications, and we don't really have that in cider at the moment. We all have our own internal and company-specific and even regional classifications of what cider are. Even just a couple simple things on the dryness scale, from dry to sweet, what is in between those two things? There's talk of identifying fruit from regions with kind of an appellation designation like they have in wines. We can talk about terroir. And just to be able to communicate what we're doing to the consumer, so that people are educated when they're at, you know, the point of sale, which is really tough for the consumer now. And I think that's the hardest part about buying cider if you're not a big cider fan yet.
Sure. I think that's what's also fun about it. It's the Wild West out there, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
There's everything from something super dry and funky and sour to sweeter ciders. There's something for everybody. And I think people who are coming from the beer world to cider, it's so much more exploration going on in our world that we haven't invented anything yet.
Yeah, we have a much more of a blank slate to start with. I mean, the beer guys, and I was an old beer guy, at least you had classic European styles as the basis. You know,
sure.
There were IPAs and there were bitters or brown stouts, and nobody really got into lagers too much, but I don't know. There isn't really a recognized classification system, so there's kind of two tracks. I think we're still waiting for enough fruit to be out, classic cider fruit. So a lot of us are experimenting on the fringes with other elements. So the hop cider thing has already been adopted by some English cider makers. It's kind of crazy, you know. I mean, they have all these traditions. And the hop cider's exploded here, and like Tom Oliver's made a hop cider, who's a real well-regarded craft cider maker. So I think we've sort of blown the lid off the cider market worldwide just because of what we're doing here.
Yeah, and speaking of hop ciders, you guys, I'm trying right now one of your all's collaboration mango hop cider.
Grasshopper. We did it with
mango jacuzzi.
Yeah, mango jacuzzi or mango hot tub.
It depends on what you prefer, a hot tub or jacuzzi.
I don't know. Our grasshopper's been one of the older hop ciders around. So Lance from the Pine Room here helped us peel a bunch of mangoes. And I think he got in there with bare feet and smashed them like an old wine.
Yeah, guy, I think, right? Yeah, definitely, we looked into the depth of the mango.
There is a cheesy element of it.
I got that.
Yeah, did you get that?
Yeah.
We made him take off his socks.
As far as pioneering goes for you guys, I'm curious, and this might be a dumb question, is there a cider association, or is it being built? Like, is there a cider guild?
Yeah, there's Eric's on the board now. I was on the board at the beginning.
Okay.
There is a national association, yeah.
There's also regional associations. So both Brad and I are on the Rocky Mountain Cider Association. Then there is the U.S. Association of Cider Makers as well. And there's regional and state associations around the country. So, yeah, there's a lot of organization happening around cider right now.
So from an organizational standpoint, law standpoint, I see where that makes sense. Is there, who would create styles at some point?
There's a lexicon project going on right now.
Future question.
With the U.S. Association of Cider Makers. It's kind of just started. It's really much in its infancy. There's going to be a lot of work coming around that in the coming months. But I think the biggest thing we have to do right now is really just kind of research what's happening in all the different regions and with all the different cider makers and try and grab terminology.
So there is a big debate about styles. So, you know, the people from Michigan are the most difficult. They make the New Yorkers look like pikers. So, and you know, the apple originated in Michigan.
Right.
No, but there is a Glint Cap. The Michigan guys have been sort of in the forefront about defining these styles. And I think just from entropy, it'll change the way the Brewers Association styles will be driven by what the cider makers are doing, even the resistance to tradition. And so there's a big push out there to go with the flow, I guess. So I don't know. We won't have there's no Apple Pope out there that's going to bless a certain thing. But even at the beginning, hop ciders were looked up, you know, like, you can't put hops in cider. It's like, you know, why the bleep not? You know?
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, we can do whatever we want with our ciders.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, come fly out here and prevent us from doing it.
So top three candidates for Apple Pope would be,
Steve Wood.
Steve Wood, yeah. Eric West and Nick Dunn. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Two of them in Colorado, so I'm slightly biased.
Now, is there, regionally speaking, you all kind of referenced terroir. Are there any distinguishing factors that are kind of more unifying around like a Rocky Mountain cider versus like a Michigan cider?
Well,
or like
I mean, I think that's our hope. And I think those of us that are planting trees, we think that eventually there are certain varieties that sort of everyone's trying to plant, that there will be differences between like a Kingston Black that's planted in the Northwest versus Colorado versus Michigan, just because the conditions are different. So these guys in New York this year, actually the woman that piloted the Golden Russet project was from California, but we all sent Golden Russet apples from our orchards to a cider bar in New York, and they did all these spec analysis and taste and photographed them. It was really cool. The differences between one variety of apple and what they do in different parts of the country. So I think going forward, that will happen. It's just all this takes so much longer than I always tell my old beer buddies and the people getting the beer business. I mean, you guys walked into something that you had ready-made suppliers of raw ingredients and all these things, and you know that's really not the case in the cider industry. So
now, Brad, oh, go ahead. Sorry, guys.
I was just gonna say the good news is while Michigan and New York and Aurora invented the apple, we're all fairly confident that Colorado in general has the best apples.
So. We actually invented the apple.
We're making the claim. You know, the Noah's Ark crashed way up on Mount Evans.
Now, Brad, you talked to me, I think I was talking to your wife earlier about a cider that you all are putting out that's featuring apples specifically only from your orchard.
Yeah, we just had our first harvest this year. So we started that project when we started the cidery. So we got signwood, basically varieties grafted, and planted those trees in 2013. So this last fall, we'd made our first harvest and made one cider from those apples. So.
And your wife specifically hand-planted each of those
trees?
Yeah,
she did, actually. Yeah. She trained you well.
Yeah.
We did this thing last night where we sort of analyzed everything, and on the way home, she said, you didn't emphasize how hard I worked on this whole thing. I said, well, yeah. It is a lot of hard work, though.
Yeah. And now, Eric, you guys are, since we last spoke with your team, in what was a much louder and cacophonous setting in the heart of Rhino, where you guys are located, you all announced that you're undergoing a big expansion as well. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we're opening up a new facility up in Lafayette, Colorado. It's 30,000 square feet. It's going to expand our production capacity pretty drastically. And we're definitely planning for the future. We're not going to fill that by any means in day one. But also, you know, we're really focusing on kind of the taproom experience, and we're looking to expand that as well. We obviously have a taproom in Rhino, but we're putting in a full-service restaurant and taproom in Lafayette with some of the best views you'll find on the Front Range. And we'll be showcasing. We'll have 30 taps there, and obviously those won't all be our own. We currently have guest taps in our Rhino taproom, but we struggle to be able to offer a large variety. So you'll see a lot more of just Colorado cider makers being showcased in that facility as well.
That's really exciting. Now, Eric, tell us what's happening over at C-Squared Cider. What's new with you guys?
So we, about 5 or 6 months ago, we recently signed with Crooked Stave Artisans Distributing. So we're now statewide in Colorado. So the last few months have really been focused on expanding in that direction. We're also looking at other markets throughout the country, so hopefully have more news to share sometime soon. Don't have too much I can divulge today, but
sure.
And we're in the building with the Rack House and Beer Style Lager House, so we get the opportunity. I know Eric mentioned opening a restaurant with STEM as well, so we're fortunate enough to have a restaurant in our facility. And like on tomorrow night, we're doing a cider dinner with the Rack House, so there'll be three courses paired with three ciders. All for $30. So we had the luxury of putting on fun events like that and really elevating cider in that manner as well, which is really fun.
Super exciting. Nice. Now, Ryan, over here with STEM Ciders, last time we spoke with you, we talked a little bit about the Cubs. And I think it was good luck that from that conversation, the Cubs went on and won a World Series.
Now, so I want to ask, who cares about the Cubs? Yeah, you know, why are we talking about the Cubs?
I'd like to attribute a very large amount of that to Kyle Schwarber coming off of the DL just for the World Series. That's a pretty incredible thing. He went from show choir to Major League Baseball, which is, I mean, I don't know. I think that's pretty fascinating.
He hit a 460-foot bomb yesterday.
Well, what I was gonna mention was that the Rockies are currently in first place in the division. So
slightly
hopefully,
ahead.
Perhaps maybe our mention of the Rockies during this podcast will help to propel them to the World Series this time around and bring it back home here to Colorado.
They lost Dexter, man. That was the key to the whole
series.
That
was the key. Dexter was my favorite player that they had.
But now he plays for the enemy.
He plays for the Cardinals, and he's crushing it over there. It's sad to see, but good at the same time. You know, you got to do certain things that are may not, you know, make sense to the general public, but you know, you gotta feed your family at some point. On a measly $1 million a year, I know that's pretty hard, so why not bump it up to 80?
Then that's why we're all gonna start working for Angry Orchard next week.
Exactly.
We all got offered $1 million a year.
Do you take Charlie Blackman?
We're very excited about it. Yeah.
Well, speaking of, I think you all kind of referenced Angry Orchard and kind of big cider ownership. You know, we're starting to see a little bit, a lot more actually in the past few weeks of acquisitions in the beer world. Is there a similar threat in cider? Are you all seeing more acquisitions coming about? Is that something that we should be worried about?
I mean, there's been a flurry of sort of investment in some cideries, particularly in the Northwest. I don't really think so. I mean, I as far as the big brewers go, I think that they have ADD when it comes to things like this. They got into cider, AB in particular, and then they moved on to hard root beer and kind of dropped the cider thing, and that the next shiny, who knows what the next shiny toy will be. I don't really think they've had enough problems in the beer world that it may come back around to cider, but I don't know. What do you think, Eric? I mean,
I don't think we're looking at the same challenges and issues that beer is.
I mean,
right now.
It might come back around, but I think that those guys have enough on their plate with the beer side of things. So
I agree.
It's a big established market. I mean, Sam Adams is a little bit of a unique situation as far as what they did with cider. Their timing was unbelievable, and you know, they've lost market share, but they still have huge market share. So they've got into all this alcoholic soda pop stuff too. Although you'll never see a Sam Adams on any of those labels, but I think for the time being we're probably off the radar with those guys. But that doesn't mean that, I mean, we're in an alcoholic beverage industry, and it probably will happen eventually. But
I think the bigger concern that we face right now is just lack of access to the market. It's the same problems that they see in craft beer.
Distribution
is being controlled much more than it has in the past. Mm-hmm. And AB's influence on that and other large producers.
Colorado's pretty good about craft. There's enough craft distribution here. But in other states, I mean, it's pretty grim about how dominant it is by just the big guys.
Well, I'm going to take a moment to plug our sponsor real quick. If you are a small to mid-sized cidery or perhaps a craft brewery and you're looking for a little bit of capital or maybe just a general banking assistance, I want to turn your attention to OnTap Credit Union. You know, OnTap Credit Union specializes in crafting individual financial solutions for people who brew great beer and cider, people who drink it, and communities where they all reside and do business. OnTap Credit Union provides financial solutions specifically designed for the brewing industry, including brick and mortar loans, equipment loans, co-branded credit cards, financial aid growth. Additionally, we're excited to announce that the newly tapped Old Town Arvada location of OnTap Credit Union just opened earlier this month. So next time you're visiting Yak and Yeti, New Image Brewing, Odyssey Beer Works, or the upcoming Denver Beer Co., drop in and find out about how OnTap Credit Union can better serve you and your small business. OnTap Credit Union, they're member-owned and Colorado proud, so visit ontapcu.org. Once again, that's ontapcu.org. All right.
Can I bring something up?
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, Ryan got a shameless plug for the Cubs, but Eric over here from Z-Squared is wearing his Milwaukee Brewers hat.
Oh, man.
And I believe he has something to say about the division-leading Brewers.
Absolutely. Yeah, tell us about the Brewers.
Well, I mean, it feels good right now to sit across from Ryan, whose Cubs won the World Series last year, and my Brewers are in first place in the NL Central.
You haven't noticed, but you can't see it, but they're currently trying to strangle each other right now. They're hopping over the table. It's getting really rambunctious.
Damn. Ryan is a really weak effort over there.
Yeah, again, there's a cage right on Friday.
Yeah. What people don't realize about Cider Week Colorado is that it all culminates into a giant cage match. We talk about people being collaborative and supportive, but in the end, it's just going to be a brawl.
Tristan, I'm sure you've seen Zoolander. It's basically like the walk-off. That's what's going to happen.
Or an Anchorman where nothing above the shoulders.
Yeah.
well, guys, thank you so much for giving us a breakdown. What for people who are still curious about how they can experience Cider Week, I know we've got the big culminating event this week in the press conference. Tell us a little bit more about the press conference. What can people expect? It's a big cider kind of display. You said 16 cideries, or
I think more than that. I think
18
plus cideries, yeah, from across Colorado and across the country.
Okay,
and across the world, actually.
Yeah, yeah, we have got a couple. We have at least one French cidery, Spanish cidery. So, yep, 70 plus ciders. Great time. It's run by Two Parts Production, which does a great job with, yeah, all their festivals as well. We had a great turnout last year. It should be a good time, some games, some fun, and that's time to try a bunch of different ciders at the Highlands
Masonic
Center.
Temple. Okay.
Yep. I want to point out, so you can find a lot more information about that and just the other events that are happening for the remainder of the week at ciderweekco.com. ciderweekco.com.
Perfect.
And just want to plug that this is Rain or Shine at the Masonic Temple. If you haven't been there before, there's a fantastic indoor and outdoor experience. So it's the weather's supposed to be a little less than optimal this Saturday, but we are still a go, and it will be inside if that's the case. So tickets are available, and you can get those through ciderweekco.com as well.
They've been doing a lot of construction up there. Is that done?
Don't we have a mantra? If you can't, remodel, if you right? can't stand a little rain, you shouldn't come out anyways.
They've been
moving back to Chicago.
Yeah, right.
Oh man, yeah. Throwing blows.
Brian deserves it.
Yeah.
Now speaking of, we're broadcasting from the Pint Room out here in Littleton, which has an insane tap wall. You said they have 10 dedicated cider lines?
Yeah, they have 10 dedicated cider lines, which is one of the highest here in the state of Colorado. They're usually featuring everybody here in the state of Colorado, as well as some out-of-state producers. So you can find C-Squared, Stem, Snowcap, Talbots. Got Charles joining us from Talbots here on the side as well. Another awesome local producer. So
he's mute.
Well, you know, he's judging. So he's a Western Slope guy, you know.
He's gonna grade us afterwards.
He is. And, yeah,
you know, they
of
invented
course.
The apple on the Western Slope.
They invented the apple. Right?
He speaks a Grand Junction dialect.
The peach. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Well, I also want to take a break real quick to give a shout out to First Draft Tap Room and Kitchen. They also have a tremendous tap wall, 40-some taps featuring a wide array of beer and also cider.
Yeah, they have two permanent cider lines there as well and feature a lot of us and do a very good job with their cider selection.
They're located at 1309 26th Street. It's a pour your own draft system, so you can actually grab a glass, pour as much or as little as you want from their draft lines. It's kind of like the adult version of Froyo. We love our friends over at First Draft Taproom and Kitchen. It's basically like a giant beer festival, but in one location, you can try a great variety of beer, cider, and wine from their 40 draft system. First Draft Taproom and Kitchen, located at 26th and Larimer, here in the heart of Denver, Colorado. Now, we've had a lot of big news that's broken in the past week, but first, Hunter, I want to talk about a little incident that happened to you recently. We always love poking fun at Hunter, and Hunter, recently you were in a skateboard accident.
I was also in the zone before that accident. Great night at El Camino.
El Camino. There we go. It wouldn't be an episode of the Porchcast without El Camino.
People have heard. I've had a little bit of a licensing issue for a week, and El Camino was nice enough. They put eight ratio handles on. They put their whole tap list. It's a little. If you guys aren't familiar, it's a little Mexican restaurant in Highland Square, and they gave us all their tap handles to kind of have a off-site tap room for a week. And yeah, we partied.
And some of us partied harder than others. Tell us what happened with your skateboard.
It lost me.
So Hunter is sitting here gingerly because his whole right side of his body is kind of in disarray.
It's battered. It lost me, and I found the pavement. I'm a little wounded. I actually found out that I busted a small artery, so it's like minor internal bleeding.
You didn't need that though, did you?
No. It's very little artery.
Arteries are overrated.
Heart or something. I don't know.
So he's got some nerve damage, and he's sitting down and trying to...
No stretching. I found out on Tuesday that stretching is like ripping the scab off before it's completely healed. Yeah, I stretched it in my office chair, and that thing popped, and I went straight to urgent care.
Great mental image.
Yeah.
So we're a hobbled team tonight. Jesse is out, and Hunter is on the DL, kind of, but he's still soldiering through.
I'm lucky I can talk. Yeah, I can talk a little bit. I can listen as well. Ears work.
Now, I do want to get to some of the news from the week, or the past few weeks. Last we broadcasted was the day after, I believe, maybe the day of the Wicked Weed acquisition that we announced from AB InBev. Now, since that announcement, we've had a good, probably a 90% or even more of the breweries that were scheduled to participate in the Wicked Weed Funkatorium Invitational pull out And just yesterday, Birds Fly South, South Carolina Brewery announced that they are starting the Funk Collective as an answer to the Funkatorium. This will feature several of the breweries that were lined up to participate, and they're now going to be joining up with Birds Fly South for a celebration of wild and sour beers. Hunter, as we saw the fallout, what were your thoughts on all these breweries leaving, and then also, you know, with this announcement of the Funk Collective, they're going to be benefiting the same nonprofit that was involved with the original Funkatorium Invitational. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are, it's this craft sticking to craft guns. I mean, where do your morals stand as a company? And I totally get why you would leave as far as being associated with a now InBev-associated festival. Like I said in the first time talking about Wicked Weed, I'm not going to freak out at Wicked Weed. I could actually care less. I think there's so much amazing beer out there that I'm not going to freak out over one single buyout. If that's the role, if that's the way they want to go, that's fine. I'm definitely on the craft side where I believe in supporting craft, supporting local as much as I can as well, too. But I don't understand, I mean, why if you're a brewery that is built upon the craft kind of ideals, why you would stick to a festival as such. I think it's great. Money, yeah, totally. But no, I think that it's great that they stuck together, they banded together, they've moved it, and they've moved it. So I'm proud of, like, of the craft industry as a whole.
Yeah. Now, a good friend of mine, Jim Varell, over at Pace Magazine, actually wrote up a really brilliant article kind of debunking all the myths behind behind Anheuser-Busch buyouts and people who serve as apologists for these AB acquisitions. For those out there who are listening, I highly recommend checking out Pace Magazine's article. You know, we don't often plug other publications, which we should, but this one in particular is brilliant. You know, people talk about when these acquisitions happen, people often point to a number of different things to serve as apologists for AB. It can range from, they're not going to change the recipes, or it'll give us more access to these beers. But in the end, it all comes down to Anheuser-Busch systematically trying to oppose craft beer, either through legislation, taking over draft lines, distribution. I know, Eric, you said access to resources, stuff like that. All of that boils down to an actual targeting of craft beer. Wouldn't you agree, Hunter?
I would, absolutely. Yep.
And, we're seeing more of that, of the craft industry speaking out. Tim Barrel is trying to open up a location in San Diego. You know, for those who aren't familiar, Tim Barrel has another location here in Denver. And the San Diego community, craft beer community, is banding together to actually fly a banner across the opening of Tim Barrel that says, Tim Barrel is not craft beer. And so you're seeing similar resistance out in Oakland with Golden Road trying to start up an Oakland location. The Oakland community is trying to oppose that opening by a number of different resources as well. And Meg Gill from Golden Road has even gone on record to try to say that there is no association between Golden Road and Budweiser, which is completely fake.
Completely fake.
Yeah.
I mean, Rhino, that's what this table is full of, is built off of small business people, like startups. Why would a brewery like 10 Barrel be there? Because of InBev money. And they have piggybacked on small business success. And sometimes the consumer doesn't know that. You know, they're excited just to see what they thought was this really cool niche brewery in Oregon, land in Rhino. They have no idea what's going on behind the scenes. So, I mean, props to San Diego to exploiting that.
Now, we're seeing a bigger shift in the craft beer landscape as a whole, both through acquisitions and mergers and also private equity. Over the past week, the brewery actually announced it was selling a majority stake to a private equity firm based out of Boston. Hunter, we're seeing more of these kind of big acquisitions and ownership stakes. From your take, where do we see this industry
such
shifting
a gritty
to?
Such a gritty topic when you start talking about venture capitalists.
Yeah.
Gosh, it's like the next level below like an InBev acquisition, in my opinion. These are, again, money hungry kind of they're adventure capitalists. They're cutthroat. They're not some, I don't feel like as if they're in too much of a concern for the craft beer industry. I think they just really do care about money.
But I want to pose this out there to all of our cider panelists here. You know, at some point, you know, in order to make that jump from small, independently owned business to wider distribution, more resources, you know, you're going to need a funding source.
Sure.
So I want to pose this out to you guys as, you know, owners of small businesses. Where do you draw that line? What's important to you in terms of funding? And is there a difference between private equity, venture capitalism, and also being purchased by a larger entity?
What? I mean, I think it all comes down to the notion of small and independent. I mean, at some point, if you have to start diluting yourself to get the capital to grow, losing control, I mean, that's a decision to make. I find this all sort of humorous in that, and I've known the Breckenridge guys forever. But what strikes me most about all this stuff is that, hey, they sell out, they make a lot of money. Great. But don't try to have it both ways. You can't still be a part of InBev and be small craft and independent. I have no ill will against those guys. But they're no longer small craft breweries. So, you know, you got to pick the devil you dance with. I mean, I think if there's consumer backlash to it, then that's a risk you take if you take the money. So,
absolutely.
I mean, you know, I think a lot of people are going to drink that beer because they don't care about any of those issues. I mean, but I can tell when there's a beer being made by a big brewer. I mean, they're flawless, they're clean, but they're soulless.
Yep.
You know, so, I mean, it's a huge market. I think AB InBev is a bigger sign of panic on their part than anything. So, I don't know, Eric,
I don't disagree. I think on the flip side of that, it does take capital to grow. And I'll speak for myself that, you know, we have investors behind our business, nothing totally at the level that we're talking about today. This is just friends and family money.
Right.
And I think what we look at when we evaluate, you know, how we want to bring capital into our business is what are the ideals and morals of the investors that we're working with and the people that we're now going to call partners in our business. I think they have to fit within our culture and really respect craft. It's challenging because there's a lot of pressure from big beer and just pushing down in a lot of different aspects of our business. And if we're going to push back, it's going to take capital. So, you know, are you going to look at friends and family? Are you going to look at angel money? Are you going to look at private equity? Then you go to venture capital. I mean, where does it end? I think it comes down to the people that you want to work with.
Right.
And, you know, like Brad said, you want to dilute your business to the point where you don't control it anymore. And that's a business decision that I certainly wouldn't want to make. And, you know, Brad stands on that. But, you know, it just depends on what your company's goals are. So I don't think money is bad. I mean, it takes money to make craft products. So we all got to be real careful about saying, like, oh, money is bad, because it's not. It takes money.
It takes money to grow.
Do what we want to do and to grow.
But the bigger issue is the whole concept of craft is a nebulous concept now. I mean,
and also identity. I think I think you're very on point of saying you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, I mean, these guys made a decision. It was based on a financial, maybe security. I've known the Elysian guys. I've been watching it since they started, and I know they had some differences in their partnership about it, but obviously the majority partners have the wherewithal to make the decision, and they wanted security, and they've been doing it for a long time. I don't begrudge them that.
Sure.
But
I think the other thing to consider with a lot of these companies is exit strategy. You know, how do you ultimately turn that the assets of a great craft brand into a retirement for a family that maybe doesn't have, you know, kids that want to take it on? I mean, of course, there's companies that have led with the Aesop examples in Belgium, Odell, I mean, there's dozens of them that have done that already. So that's certainly an opportunity, but it doesn't work for everybody. And Aesops are their own totally different beast, and they're very expensive, and it presents challenges down the road. So, you know, I don't fault people for having an exit strategy at some point if you have if you don't have one, you're going to have problems down the road anyway. But Brad said it, you can't have it both ways.
Well, taking one more break real quick before we get into more topics. Speaking of financial planning, Latitude Financial Group is available to help with your financial planning needs. Start 2017 the right way. Go to latitudefinancialgroup.com to schedule a complimentary meeting and consultation today. They can help you pay less in taxes, get your portfolio in order, and also plan for your business. Once again, that's latitudefinancialgroup.com to schedule a complimentary meeting today. Now, speaking of identity and having it both ways, I want to bring on our producer, Sam Sly, here in just a moment, because we've kind of been involved in, Sam in particular, was involved in engaged in a Twitter kind of discussion, if you will, with the folks over at Good Beer Hunting, which coincidentally enough is involved in the October project, which is a publication that brought Good Beer Hunting, partnered up with Pitchfork, and also ZX Ventures, which is an arm of Anheuser-Busch. Now, PorchDrinking.com was also involved in a little bit of a Twitter engagement with Good Beer Hunting recently. Last month, we published an article that just looked at financial contributions from breweries as a whole. Earlier this week, Good Beer Hunting took a very arbitrary and specific portion of an article which dealt with campaign contributions, and basically criticized the fact that we were still talking about the fact that Anheuser-Busch contributes to a wide variety of campaigns. Seemed kind of nebulous and random that Good Beer Hunting would call out a random article, target a specific reference to Anheuser-Busch, and also come to their defense. And so I guess my question to them was, why are you even bringing this up? Now, Sam, you were involved a little bit in this as well, because you got involved in the fray. Can you tell us a little bit about your involvement?
Yeah, so essentially, I the other day just saw them tweeting about how if people are gonna be, you know, putting AB on blast and calling them out for playing in different sandboxes, essentially, that, you know, people should be aware and talk about and how the Brewers Association basically, well, still, it's kind of taking money in a sense from AB in terms of Anheuser-Busch is a member of the Brewers Association, and that, you know, AB InBev have massive end cap spaces at GABF, and I usually try to stay out of these kinds of debates because I'm not a real think from the hip kind of guy, but I decided to comment and had a little series of tweets, and one of them was mainly that it's not exactly really the same thing to compare taking money from kind of quote-unquote the enemy for being part of an association or paying you for a service at a festival as it is to being purchased by the brewery itself. That's not ownership. It's a transaction as opposed to who, like, you know, controls the money going in there. And, you know, in my experience with that whole interaction was Good Beer Hunting kind of navigated my four tweets, kind of picked one that they were able to navigate the conversation and kind of direct the conversational flow with, and it kind of got us off track of kind of some of the main points there. So it was just interesting that they kind of were able to, I feel like they're very adept at PR.
Well, I think it kind of shows just a common theme of organizations that have become involved with Anheuser-Busch in some way or form spouting the same kind of PR, I guess, formula that is dispelled from the Anheuser-Busch high-end brand kind of umbrella. And so it seems a little bit confusing why Good Beer Hunting, you know, if they were to say that they're not directly affiliated with Anheuser-Busch, would arbitrarily pick out ways to defend Anheuser-Busch. And so my question is, why? You know, like, why get involved in the fray? Why nitpick little pieces from random publications across the web? You know, they're threatening a libel suit to the guys over at We Are Beer Studs, I think.
Oh, Brew Studs.
Brew Studs, yeah. We Are Beer Brew Studs, for associating Good Beer Hunting with within their article calling out brands to avoid that are involved with Anheuser-Busch. And so it's just all seems like they're the rich kid on the playground who has always been kind of sucking up to the teacher and taking their ball and saying, like, you know, we're taking our ball and going home and you can't play anymore. Yeah. Just because they're getting picked on a little bit.
One more kind of thought that just kind of popped in my mind is I know that Good Beer Hunting also, especially based on like their Twitter profile, promote themselves as kind of an agency of sorts, that they create strong brands and do their deep dive podcast, and they have a lot of these flowery words, but I do feel like some of their tactics can be muddying the waters there a little bit in terms of, I don't want to say credibility, but just, I don't know, it's starting to get murky, you know what I mean? It's not black and white anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, even more, I think we talk a lot about AB, but I want to steer the conversation to a bigger potential impact on the industry. Peter Bukart announced earlier this week, or last week, that he's leaving New Belgium in the upcoming future to start working with Purpose Brewing Cellars. This is a huge, huge deal. For those who aren't familiar, Peter Bukart is the brewmaster at New Belgium, has been for several years, responsible for launching La Folie and also several seasonal brands, but most importantly, started their sour program. This is, I think to me, this is akin to like Michael Jordan leaving the Bulls in his prime and joining like a CBA league team. Hunter.
Michael Jordan did leave for
baseball.
Yeah.
But there was some gambling behind that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to implicate Peter Bukart in any gambling schemes. But, I mean, you know, Purpose Brewing is kind of was purchased. Okay, so little backstory. 1933 brewing in Fort Collins was purchased by the head brewer there and his now wife. And they shut down for a few months while they rebranded to become Purpose Brewing. Small microbrewery, and Peter Bukart leaving this storied program to essentially start their cellar program at Purpose Brewing. What is Ural's take? I mean, you all have been in the industry. You're familiar with the impact that Peter has had on...
Yeah, I mean, I knew Peter when he first came, but I guess I don't see it as... surprise, I guess. I mean, it's not unlike Mitch Steele leaving Stone and starting his own brewery.
Sure.
I mean, I don't know what... I've just watched New Belgium from afar, but I imagine Peter's made a fair amount of money, and he's probably got a little bored with mass-produced beer. Those guys obviously have been trying to figure out how to keep growing with making every beer in the world.
Sure.
You know, I'm always surprised they did what? But I don't know. I think good for Peter. I loved his comment about cleaning kegs. I mean, I think he was trying to get back to roots.
Yeah.
When you're that big of a brewery thing, you're that much more removed from it. So I think it actually is a real positive thing.
Absolutely.
It's a really great thing.
And Peter and his wife Frazee aren't this isn't their first time starting a side project. They back in Belgium when he was brewing for Rodenbach, they actually started a side project brewery with some of their friends. So this is, like you said, getting back to roots. This is kind of a really exciting development.
I'm excited to try his beers.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
It's going to be
a blast. It reminds me a lot of Troy Casey leaving AC Colton. I mean, he has done incredible things with Casey Brewing and Blending. I think that, you know, the sky's the limit for Peter Bukart. He clearly knows what he's doing. And I think that, you know, I think sometimes maybe you just get bored and you don't feel as creative as you know that you are. And I hope that this provides him the opportunity to be as creative as he needs to be and really, really set the bar for, you know, maybe whatever project he's doing needs to be.
Absolutely. And his wife, Frazee, we actually did an interview with her, kind of talking about her involvement with New Belgium and how she has kind of left her mark on the craft beer industry as well. But even in that article, which I think posted probably 3 or 4 months ago, she mentioned about how Peter is constantly striving to educate himself and learn within the industry. So this is definitely a nod to that. It was kind of a unique little foreshadowing of this side project. So I think that's pretty cool. Well, thanks, guys. I really appreciate all of you all joining us today. C-Squared Ciders, Colorado Cider Company, Stem Ciders, thanks so much for joining us on episode 30.
is it 37 Seven. Of the Porchcast? Wow. And really excited about what's happening in the craft cider industry here in Colorado. Any parting thoughts?
Well, we're roasting a goat tomorrow night, so come out and eat some goat and drink some cider.
Right. It's a good sacrifice before we go to the Masonic.
Actually, we're actually calling it a cubby sandwich.
Oh, that's fine. Oh. Hey, the goat's been dead for a year now. It's okay.
Well, Cider Week Colorado features a host of tremendous events. Eric, where can people find out more once again on the website?
CiderWeekCO.com.
CiderWeekCO.com. Be sure to check it out. Find out all the amazing cider events that are happening around town. Also, want to send a final shout out to some of our sponsors. First Draft Tap Room and Kitchen, located at 1309 26th Street, Pour Your Own Draft System. Latitude Financial Group, which can help you with your financial planning needs. OnTap Credit Union, which helps with individual and small business banking solutions. And also Made by Chalk. We talked a lot about brand identity and also branding as a whole during this episode. Chalk specializes in creating brand experiences for the craft brewing industry, from product packaging to websites, apps, and events. If you're a new business, new brewery, new cidery that's out there looking to find services tailored for your independently owned business, go to madebychalk.com to learn how they can help service your branding needs. Thanks, guys, once again. We really appreciate you guys joining us. It was really cool to learn about all the amazing craft cider that's happening around the state. Looking for more upcoming in this industry. It's really exciting.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks, guys.